Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. And coming up today, activism through the ages. Actipedia is an open access database with examples of creative change making, from a radical Jewish reformer named Jesus to guerrilla theater from the Syrian resistance. And creating the zero waste home, practical tips on reducing waste from a blogger whose household produces only 1 quart of garbage per year. But first, sales in the surgical suite. Pharmaceutical companies have long been accused of trying to influence medical decisions for profit. Those charges aren't exclusive to drug makers. The New York Times reporter Ronnie Rubin wrote about a lawsuit against the makers of the Da Vinci surgical system. That's a robotic assistant now being used in more than 1,300 hospitals across the United States. Ronnie's investigation found evidence of aggressive marketing tactics by the device makers, raising some questions about training and standards in the surgical suite. Ronnie Rubin, thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. What an interesting case here. And I'm curious about when a device like Da Vinci, this is the surgical tool, is brought to market, who decides what kind of training, what kind of implementation is required for participating surgeons?
Well, that's a very interesting case question because it has to do with how a lot of medical devices are brought to market. They are often not approved the way the FDA approves drugs, where they require clinical trials and they look at the data. And we know there's all kinds of questions and issues there. But often medical devices are brought on with the argument that they're similar to existing devices. And that's part of what happened here. At first, when Intuitive Surgical wanted to bring this to market, the FDA wanted to see about their training, what kind of training they were going to provide. And the FDA actually kicked back the training twice and wanted more training and more specifics. They wanted a lot of information. This training was going to have at least 3 days of on-site training in Intuitive Surgical's lab, working on cadavers or pigs or mm-hmm. or whatnot. They were going to have an exam. The FDA wanted to see the exam. It was a 70-item test that the surgeons would have to take, and they would have to complete it successfully. But eventually, Intuitive was able to clear the device, saying that this robotic surgery, which we know is actually a unique and very brand new type of surgery and uh-huh. type of device, was actually similar to instruments that were already on the market, and so they were cleared instead of approved. And all that training was completely at their discretion. And the 3 days got watered down to one day of hands-on training. There's some other components to it, but one day of hands-on training at their lab. The 70-item test was watered down to a 10-item quiz that someone could take on the computer, and if they got an answer wrong, the computer would actually say, try again. So there was no way they could even fail the 10-item quiz.
Right. Okay, so let's see. This is all brought about, of course, because of this case of a man named Fred Taylor. He went in for a routine prostatectomy in 2008. He actually, there was a sort of cascading series of complications. The surgery took more than 13 hours. He'd been this active 67-year-old retiree, left with a colostomy bag, led to kidney, lung damage, sepsis, and eventually stroke and death. Okay, so what's the implication here for Intuitive? What are the charges being brought against them?
Well, in this case, Fred Taylor's surgeon was operating using the robotic surgery device for the first time without supervision. So he'd had that one day of training. He'd had 2 days of supervision, or what's called proctoring in medicine. And Fred Taylor was his first live case on his own, and it was a disaster. Fred Taylor actually survived for 2 years. He was apparently quite a big, strong guy, and some people thought that was the only reason he pulled through. They mm-hmm. called it at the hospital the Da Vinci debacle, his case, because it was so disastrous. But what's interesting, and I really have to give credit to the attorneys representing him, because they dug up a lot of this information.
And including some emails that were shown to you by lawyers for his estate. Who were they from, and what did they reveal?
They revealed that the amount of training at each hospital in this country was very different, and each hospital makes that decision. However, they rely on Da Vinci's experts, the sales reps, to help them make that decision. How many proctored, practice-observed surgeries someone will have before they're alone with the patient in the room, along with the sales rep too. But the sales rep knows some technical things about the machine, and says quite clearly that he's there often to make sure that the surgeon doesn't kind of forget how the clutch works on this robot, or doesn't have the instruments colliding midair. I mean, it can really be that kind of technical. But the amount of training was very much influenced by these sales reps. Now, the sales reps wanted to get these things in use because they were paid, not just on – some people were paid for selling them. The sales reps were paid every time they used them. And that's what we see in these – they want to make their quotas. So in one case, a hospital was going to ask that its surgeons have 5 practice sessions with a supervising doctor who had much more experience in the room.
Uh-huh.
And – the email from the sales rep says, you know, this could have some very serious unintended consequences. This is above, I'll just read it. I wanted to point out that with your requirement to have a minimum of 5 proctorings for the Category 1 surgeon, there might be some unintended consequences. And the hospital person in charge of making this decision wrote back and said, we will review and most likely will decrease the 5 down to 3. In another category, move from 3 to 2.
Wow!
So these guys were very influential, and they did not have a background in medicine. They had a background in marketing.
Right, right. Okay. So, all right. Do you get any sense of whether hospitals are taking note or pulling back on the use of robot-assisted surgery after this case? And this is not, by the way, the only case that where robotic surgical implements are being brought into question.
I think a lot of pressure is also on the individual surgeons, so not just the hospital committees. Some of these clinical sales reps, these hospital sales reps for the company, will actually page a surgeon and say, you need to switch to robotic to make your quota, to make my quota. Someone said in another email, he contacted the doctor and said, do you have some cases coming up? And then the sales rep says, two of these cases weren't robotic. And then the sales rep says, I pointed out that he wouldn't improve if he didn't do cases consistently. He agreed to convert the next 2 to Da Vinci. And you see this everywhere. You see them, one of the team leaders say, let's bring it home. Be sure you scrub off schedules. Identify cases on Thursday and Friday that can be moved up because the quarter ended and their salaries were going to be determined by the end of that Friday.
Right, so the always be closing seems to have taken precedence. Before we wrap, Ronnie, which we have to do in just a moment, any evidence that robotically assisted surgery does result in better outcomes for patients overall?
The largest study done of 250,000 hysterectomies that compared outcomes between robotic surgeries and other minimally invasive surgeries with a small incision found no difference in outcomes.
Mm. Ronnie Rabin, reporter for The New York Times. I want to thank you for going through that story and joining us today.
Thank you.
You'll find a link to Ronnie's article, Salesman in the Surgical Suite. That's at wordofmouthradio.org.